Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
This is DW's Africa Link program, live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host.
With me, Wanjiku Mwawara, making sure we are receiving all your comments on social media as the show continues.
Coming up on the program, Kenyans anxiously await results from Tuesday's disputed election as hundreds of red police patrol the capital, Nairobi. We'll hear from our correspondent there.
This time round, the government's better prepared, and that the real reasons that led to 2007-2008 clashes that happened around Rift Valley are not there.
That was an analyst rather telling us how the preparedness of, you know, the situation in Nairobi. Wanjiku.
And of course, if you're listening from wherever on the continent, to join the conversation, go to the Facebook page DW Africa for these stories and more.
Yes, of course, we are monitoring the situation in Nairobi and we'll keep you updated with all your comments on our Facebook page. But first is another chance to hear what's been happening around the world.
My name is Jen Nyingi with DW News. We begin in Egypt, where at least 21 people have been killed and 80 injured in a collision involving two passenger trains in Alexandria. There was no immediate information on what had caused the collision, but Ministry of Transport officials said it could have been due to a breakdown in one of the trains that brought it to a halt on the rails. President Donald Trump has once again issued a strong warning to North Korea, saying military solutions are in place, locked and loaded, should it go ahead with its missile testing. In his latest tweet, Trump said he hopes Kim Jong-un will find another path. On her part, German Chancellor Angela Merkel has opposed any use of force to resolve the North Korea conflict.
I believe that I'm firmly convinced that an escalation of rhetoric will not contribute to a solution of this conflict. I do not see a military solution to this conflict. Rather, I see continuous work like we saw in the UN Security Council. In view of North Korea, Germany will be intensively involved with the potential solutions that we see, not of a military manner. But escalation of rhetoric I hold as the wrong answer.
Aber Eskalation der Sprache halte ich für die falsche Antwort.
Kenyans are eagerly waiting for the official results of Tuesday's disputed election that put President Uhuru Kenyatta ahead of the opposition leader Raila Odinga. The Election Commission Body Chair Wafula Chebukati has urged all to be patient, although by law they have until Tuesday next week to announce the results.
We call upon Kenyans and all stakeholders to be patient with this exercise. We want to ensure that the results are accurately collated, and this may take a little bit of time.
You are listening to DW News. The European Union plans to hold an extraordinary meeting following an egg contamination scandal. Tensions have risen between Belgium, the Netherlands and Germany after a toxic insecticide was found in batches of eggs. Millions of eggs and eggs-based products have been taken off the market since the scare went public on 1st of August. 15 EU countries, Hong Kong and Switzerland, are affected. EU Commission spokesperson Mina Andreeva explains the urgency of the meeting.
The aim is to draw the relevant lessons and discuss the ways to continuously improve the effectiveness of the EU system to deal with food fraud and food safety issues. This should happen with some distance to the ongoing events and as soon as we have all the facts available, and that is why we look at the 26th of September.
Heavy fighting erupted today in South Sudan town of Pangak after rebels launched an offensive against government forces. Rebels spokesman Paul Lam said they were seeking to recapture Pangak after government forces took control early last month. For more news and information, visit dw.com or download the app. My name is Jen Nyingi.
Welcome once again to the program, live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host.
With me, Wanjiku Mwawara.
We begin in Kenya, where the people there are still anxiously waiting for the official results of Tuesday's disputed election, as hundreds of red police patrol Nairobi's central business district and opposition supporters, burning tires, blocking roads in several areas. Kenya's Election Commission has rejected claims by opposition leader Raila Odinga that its database was hacked and results manipulated against him, and that an unofficial tally confirms him as the winner. Provisional results show, however, that President Uhuru Kenyatta is with a wide lead over the 72-year-old Odinga, who may be facing his last chance at the presidency after three unsuccessful attempts. Well, I've been speaking to DWC Laoneko, who spent a better part of her day in Nairobi's Kibera Slum, and take a listen.
I was in Kibera the whole day, and basically in the morning it was very charged, it was very heated up. People were burning tires and they were preparing rocks with slings. And so basically two opposing groups were kind of gearing up against each other, and they had, and especially the residents of the area which protesters would have to go through, were worried that their shops would be looted and people would burn things. So all of the businesses were basically closed.
We understand violence might erupt once results are announced, especially in Kibera, which is Raila Odinga's constituency. What more can you tell us about these fears?
I think that people are definitely waiting for the election results to be announced, and people are very anxious, and there are definitely a lot of supporters there who would take to the streets if the results are announced and people are not happy with them. So there is definitely a potential for unrest there. But on the other hand, the rest of Nairobi is pretty calm. Everybody's basically in a waiting mood. So it all depends on what happens when the results are announced and whether people are happy with it or not.
We understand you've been talking to a number of people in Kibera, a place that Raila Odinga has represented in parliament for quite a long time. Does it remain popular there?
Yes, but people are of course usually upset with the government which is there at the moment, which is Uhuru Kenyatta's government. So people are basically saying that the current government under Uhuru Kenyatta hasn't done anything for them. So many people are very disappointed with that. So he still has a very strong support in Kibera. And of course, things are often split along ethnic lines, and he has there are quite a few people who support him there.
That was our own Sela Oneko in Nairobi at the moment. Now, Wanjiko, tell us what people are saying about this particular story.
Well, Atanasi says, "Dear Kenyans, let's embrace peace. Don't let power-hungry individuals make you kill your fellow Kenyans." And Mariga Thoithi says, "Police helicopters are flying over Jamhuri and Kibera every 5 minutes." And Mr. Kaplan, this is how he goes on social media, says, "By the way, there is a chopper doing rounds here, and Kibera is as peaceful as it always is. In fact," he adds, "in fact, let me go to Edu to get a haircut."
Now, this is a story that we are monitoring as it develops. The opposition requested access to the Election Commission servers to confirm whether alleged hacking took place, but the commission has rejected such claims by opposition leader Raila Odinga that its database was indeed hacked and results manipulated, and that an unofficial tally confirms him as the winner. Well, Rebecca Rumpel from Chatham House in London spoke more about these allegations. Take a listen as well.
"I think it's unfortunate that the results started to be announced before the IEBC had uploaded all the relevant forms onto the internet, so that can be clearly checked, you know, with the signatures of the returning officers. I'm not a technology expert, so just looking at this, you know, the 52-page log that NASA has published and said shows that, you know, the database was hacked, I'm afraid I don't want to comment on that. I don't have the expertise to understand that. But I believe the IEBC has said it's separately looking into that as well."
That was Rebecca Rumpel from Chatham House in London.
And Isaac Courier says, "Nothing in the Constitution requires losers to be gracious, but the health of democracy does. And we are seeing, Isaac, lots of people commenting on this story a lot. Of course, some people are commenting on how the candidates should respond to however the results end up. And the candidates we are talking about here are the presidential candidates. That's Uhuru Kenyatta and Raila Odinga. We have another comment here coming in from Riti Mutunga, who says, "I just love my countrymen. And my, many thanks to Githeriman for bringing a smile to us all." Now, Isaac.
Well, many thanks, Wanjiko. Indeed, keep those comments flowing on DW Africa, and she will read them right here on air. Well, a little earlier before we came on air, I spoke to Martin Olu, a political analyst in Nairobi, to talk about the many challenges facing the incoming president, as well as the difficulty to unite the country that has been divided along ethnic lines.
As things stand, I think that the current president is designed to continue as the president, and his priorities, therefore, are to meet the pledges that he has been making. There will be expectations, and he must begin to show that he really intends to do that, including the issue of the free secondary school, the implementation of it, and the clarity around it, effective January, has to be prioritized now.
Once again, Kenyans have been divided along tribal lines during the elections. Do you think it's going to be an easy task for President Uhuru to reconcile all the divided parties?
I'm not sure that it's going to be an easy task, and it might take longer for us to begin to look at our politics from issues and from the basis of abilities. For now, we are organizing and we are voting along ethnic lines, and that in itself has the tendency of dividing us. And for that reason, it will take different types of politicians to be able to walk us out of that. Hopefully, as the Kenyan age becomes younger, and they are really majority, this year alone there were 5.2 million out of 19 million voters, new ones, who were voting for the first time. In another 5 years, who knows, more than a half of the voters will be younger people. And those younger people have a cultural understanding that is slightly different from the older people who are so stuck in their tribe.
Is there reason to worry that there could be a repeat of the 2007-2008 post-election violence?
There is absolutely no reason. This time round, the government is better prepared, and that the real reasons that led to 2007-2008 clashes that happened around Rift Valley are not there, because those communities have since joined together, and so that area remains peaceful. But that said, it's also incumbent on whoever is going to lose, that's the NASA candidate, to actually come out and concede. I think that he has put up some fight. He has been disputing the results as they come. My problem with him is that he has not been putting what I would call irrefutable or tangible evidence.
The two leaders, or the two politicians, Uhuru Kenyatta and Raila Odinga, have been exchanging not-so-good words in recent days. Can the two really work together for the sake of Kenyans?
I'm telling you that besides the political platforms and besides whipping their ethnic communities, these two leaders are very much friends. Their families are friends. So what they need to do is invite each other for a cup of tea and give each other the kind of comfort they need, and they can leave the rest of Kenyans alone, because Kenyans need peace. They need to go about their normal business. They need to make a livelihood. So these leaders cannot hold Kenyans to ransom.
That was Martin Olu, a political analyst in Nairobi, inviting the two leaders to meet and take a cup of tea so Kenyans can move on with life, Wanjiko.
And there has been a trending topic, namely Kenya moving forward. And people have been tweeting pictures and sending pictures on Facebook of how business is back to usual in some parts of the, in actually most parts of the country. James here says, happy to see Kenyans have resumed their daily hustle. And Marco Tani says, but isn't it amazing when international observers show confidence in our polls? We can always improve, but it feels great. Kenya is moving forward.
Meka says, people in Kisii area are back to work, back to business, back to nation building. Hashtag Kenya moving forward.
And Limo Allen says, business back to normal in Narok.
Now, Wanjiko, tell me about this Githeri man that you are... that is trending and you're discussing about a little earlier.
So Githeri, first of all, is a local dish that is maize and beans together, and it's boiled and you can eat it the way it is, so after it's boiled. And this man was standing on the queue with a polythene bag with githeri inside, and a photo was taken, and he's been made a meme.
Well, interesting then, good for him. And keep those comments flowing about the Kenyan elections, and we will always read them here live on air whenever we can. And just in case you're joining us, this is DW's Africa Link program, live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
With me, Wanjiko Mwaura.
Our top story of the day, Kenyans are still anxiously waiting for official results of Tuesday's presidential election. And riot police is also on standby to quell any possible violence.
And on social, our social chat today is about the young people that have been elected into power in Kenya. And our question to you is, if you're a young person, what is stopping you from running for office? Write into us on our DW page, Facebook page, DW Africa.
Including one of, you know, Kenya's leading artists, Jagwal, who was also a new member of parliament. You know, we would like to hear what you think about the new artists making it to parliament. But in the next minutes, also we'll be hearing from a blogger telling us about her work. Take a listen.
I am a feminist, and I believe that feminism is a key tool for the liberation of African women, of women generally, and of men, of all of us who have been confined by limited patriarchal gender norms.
But before all that, let's go to Cameroon, which says it has arrested the leader of the military wing that is pressing for independence of the English regions in the southwest of the country. He joins a string of leaders from the English-speaking regions. Banning of schools and markets is still rampant 9 months after the protests began. And there are no signs that the situation will get back to normal anytime soon. From Yaoundé, Mekinzeka sent this report.
This is a market in the northwest regional town of Bafut. Friday is one of the three working days which traders are allowed to sell. Among the business people is tomato seller Elvis Nyeye Begam. He says the past 9 months have been the most difficult for him in his 10 years as a tomato seller.
When we bring the tomato from the bushes where we are buying, they will say today is strike. And when the strike is going on, we cannot sell in the market. For example, we always buy from 100 baskets. And when you come back, you are unable to even sell up to 30. And the next day, they will say strike. The day that you'll be coming to the market, all that 70 will be damaged already.
Sipren Jola, who washes cars for a living, agrees that business is down.
The money that I used to make a day, it can't be again. Because very few vehicles come because they are afraid of the strike. If I wash the whole day, I can have 5,000, 4,000. Now, if I struggle, I can have 2,000.
Sipran is referring to 2,000 CFA, which is roughly $3.5. If Sipran and Elvis disobey calls not to do business 2 days in a week, their property may be burned. Several business premises have been burnt down, but no one has claimed responsibility. This week, Cameroon's government spokesperson, Issa Chiruma Bakari, announced that those who were organizing the burnings had set up a military wing of what he called the English-speaking Cameroon Liberation Movement. He said the country's police had discovered weapons and a factory to fabricate bombs and explosives in the English-speaking northwestern town of Mbengwe.
The main suspect resides in a foreign country of which he is also a national, although he is of Cameroonian origin. He admitted being a member of the Ambazonia and the main leader of the armed wing of the Liberation Movement of Southern Cameroon.
Six suspects have been arrested and transported to Yaoundé, where they will face a military court. They will join hundreds of others arrested in connection with the strikes and burnings. When the protests began, President Paul Biya said he was open to talks with the protesters, but warned he will never accept any attempt to destabilize what he called Cameroon's hard-earned national unity.
Moki Kinzeka reporting from Yaoundé.
Blog report.
It's now time to meet blogger Mina Salami. She's a Nigerian, Finnish, and Swedish writer, and she's also the founder of Pan-African feminist blog Miss Afropolitan, through which she is frequently sought after for ideas as a journalist, keynote speaker, gender specialist, lecturer, and consultant. Currently in London, DW's Eunice Wanjiru caught up with her and wanted to find out why she chose to blog.
Well, I started reading blogs. I became aware of blogging technology. So before, I actually started blogging in 2007, but I wasn't doing that professionally. Before then, you couldn't really blog unless you had technical expertise. So as soon as spaces like Blogspot and so on started to pop up, I instantly started blogging because I had a lot that I wanted to say. And I also found the blogging format as very useful for feminism because...
Okay, you've mentioned feminism, which is actually what you write about mostly in the African continent. Could you maybe fill us in as to why you decided to write about this kind of topic?
Well, I am a feminist, and I believe that feminism is a key tool for the liberation of African women, of women generally, and of men, of all of us who have been confined by limited patriarchal gender norms. But, you know, when people ask me why I am a feminist, I'm almost inclined to say that a better question would be, why is any woman not a feminist? You know, because when we look at the world today, when we look at the situations that women face all around us, no matter where we are in the world, you know, there's so much violence against women. There's so many walls that women need to break down. And I find it almost a better question to wonder, why are so many women still not feminists? And I think that question leads us to perhaps an uncomfortable truth, which is that we are still so oppressed.
Well, in most positions of power, we find men. Can you say things have changed over time?
Well, at the moment, we have one woman in power, and so I can't really say that things have changed so much. At the same time, yes, we do have women in certain countries. We have an increasing number of women in parliament. And certainly those are developments that should be acknowledged. But to be honest, I think we shouldn't pat ourselves on the back prematurely.
You are a contributor to The Guardian and Huffington Post and many others. Are these platforms also places where you can speak your mind, or are you quite restricted?
There's nowhere in the world where women of African heritage are open to say what we want to say. But that doesn't mean that I ever feel restricted, because there's always creative ways to express what needs to be expressed. But what matters is that we create our own platforms where we can express ourselves freely. And that's precisely what Ms. Afropolitan has been about, you know, because that is a domain that I own and a space in which I can say precisely what I want to say.
That was Eunice Wanjiru talking to Mina Salami, a Pan-African feminist who is the founder of Miss Afropolitan, a blog.
And as usual, every Friday, we can't leave you without a dose of some sports to spice up your weekend. Now, here's Sam Omale in Lagos.
We begin the sports news with the latest FIFA world rankings. Egypt remains Africa's top-ranked side, but dropped one place to 25th in the overall standings. The Democratic Republic of Congo are second in the continent and 28th overall. Africa's champions, Cameroon's Indomitable Lions, climbed one spot to 35th overall and are ranked 5th in the continent, behind Senegal and Tunisia. Meanwhile, Brazil exchanged places with Germany, replacing them at the top of the rankings, while Argentina maintained their third place position. Still on football, ahead of the 2018 African Nations Championship designed exclusively for footballers who play in their domestic leagues, this weekend, Uganda will welcome Rwanda to the St. Mary's Stadium, Kitende, on Saturday as the battle for qualification ahead of the January 2018 tournament in Kenya. After seeing his side edge Sudan 2-1 in a friendly match on Monday at Kigali Stadium, Amavubi head coach Anthony Hay is confident of a positive result.
We need a good result to have everything in our own hands. People are excited. They want to see their team getting into the next round, and therefore we need a good result here.
Elsewhere, Bafana Bafana hosts Chipolopolo of Zambia at the Buffalo City Stadium. Bafana Bafana coach Stuart Baxter, whose team has been depleted as a result of players' withdrawal, is hoping the odds will not be against them as they seek to book their place in Kenya.
We've had people coming to camp and then leaving, and people that are on camp but they can't stay for the second game. And I understand the clubs, I'm not criticising them. I'm just saying that this tournament at this time for South Africa is a very, very, very difficult one.
Another top fixture this weekend will be the game between the Black Stars of Ghana and the Stallions of Burkina Faso. Black Stars coach Maxwell Konadu is confident that his side will pick some points on the road.
The boys are doing their best. We are very confident, but we also need to know that we're going to play against a very strong opponent. So we respect our opponent, but we are confident we can always win, even away from home.
Now to the 2017 IWAF World Championships in London, where the London Stadium was shocked to see Wayne Van Niekerk's bid for the 200 meters and 400 meters double end as Turkey's Ramil Guliyev claimed a shock 200 meters win. South Africa's Van Niekerk was seen to emulate Michael Johnson's feat from 1995, but finished second. Isaac Makwala of Botswana was sixth.
I think it was the best I could give for this competition, but there's a long future for me ahead of me, and I still have a lot of work that I can do as an athlete. There's so much that I can still achieve, and I think this is really just the beginning of what I can achieve as an athlete.
For more sports news, check out dw.com/sports.
Sam Omale in Lagos. And let's take you back to our main story about the Kenyan elections, where young people have been elected into power. One of them is 24-year-old John Paul Muregi, who's an incoming MP, and he used a bicycle during his campaigns. So we asked you on Facebook, if you are a young person, what is stopping you from running for office?
And we are having comments from all over the continent, Isaac, I'm telling you. A user says, I am so proud of him. He must empower the young ones to be strong and fight for their future.
Lamin Fadera from Brufort in the Gambia says nothing should stop young people from running for office except the lack of required qualifications.
And we have Percy from Cameroon who says the problem in most African countries is not the lack of will to run for office. The problem is with the very old leaders who refuse to give opportunities to young people to rule.
It says, take an example like Zimbabwe and Cameroon, whose presidents are up to 90 years old. Remember, those are comments that we are reading from our Facebook page, DW Africa. Obiechina Peter from Nigeria says, well, young people running for a political office depends on the country. Like in Nigeria, a 24-year-old man can't contest for a political office because a country that is as big as Nigeria needs experienced men to lead.
And we are also looking at Lavenda Make, who is just writing in. And she says there's also a young lady, age 24, who was elected. I love my country, Kenya, and hate it at the same time due to corruption and extrajudicial killings. This, remember again, are your comments on our Facebook page.
Aliyu Mohammed Al-Khatim from northeastern Nigeria says, honestly, in my locality, it is very rare, almost impossible to see anyone below the age of 35 to 40 running for a seat. For example, since our independence, that is in Yobe State from the old Borno State, the cabinets have been the same, especially the state executive council.
And Elias says, well, you must have money to run for such an office in Ghana.
Talking about young people joining elective office, you know, I mean, we talked about the Kenyan artist popularly known as Jaguar and his hit Kigeugeu. He's now a member of parliament after Uganda's Bobby Wine also made it, you know. So
that is indicating a very interesting trend of actually performers, that is artists, yeah,
remember
entertainers.
Professor Jay from Tanzania.
In Tanzania,
who are
running for public office. Young people are moving on to, you know, effect change within their communities.
Yeah, and Ivy Junior Citizen says, this is what we want to see in African politics. Zambia must emulate Kenya's kind of democracy, which is inclusive, young, all men and women. And with that, we come to the end of this edition. On behalf of the entire crew, the Depression Crew, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Wanjiku Mwaura.
Wishing a splendid weekend ahead.